Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Nima Fiends.
Freedom Fiends.
Freedom Dean.
Michael Dean.
Freedom Dean and Nima Dean. Nima Fiend.
And Nima V.
Who's calling you?
I don't know. Some 800 number. I'm ignoring it.
So we were talking about what we talked about previously about getting ticks off a dog. And I said, DJ said that the best way to do it is pour whiskey on it. And they just curl right up and fall off. It's better than burning them or pulling them off your pet.
And I'm like, shit, I'm not wasting no whiskey.
I know.
F that.
And I said, you got to pay taxes on it.
Not only that, but here in Washington, liquor is sold in state-run stores, and all the money goes to the government.
So. That is so square, man.
It's so square. It's like buying a bond.
Yeah. Bond. Yeah. James Bond. Whiskey and ticks. Shaken, not stirred.
And I don't want to do that. It's unfortunate, you know? I want to buy liquor, but I don't want my funds to go to bureaucrats, but don't have a choice here. They have a monopoly on it. It also just makes me cringe when I have to pay sales tax, which I feel like I pay a lot more here in Washington than I did in Wyoming. In Wyoming, I almost didn't notice the sales tax. You know, I think it's like 4% or something like that. Here in Washington, it's like 8 or 9. And on an average purchase, I'm paying $2-3 to the government, which, of course, I don't like to do. And most libertarians and anarcho-capitalists would also feel dirty doing. How about you, Michael? What do you feel about, how do you feel when you have to pay the government sales tax?
I don't know. I'm typing to some girl I used to know on Facebook who didn't like my post about want freedom, leave California for South Dakota. She lives in California, and she said, you're f***ing kidding me, right? That article doesn't mention that South Dakota has the toughest abortion laws on the book, and that those laws are against separation of church and state. And of course it says that same-sex marriage is legal in California. I'm ashamed of you for even posting this, Mr. Dean.
And I said, she's ashamed.
I said, I'm ashamed of you for being ashamed of me. Shame.
Well, okay. We talked about the list last time. Do you think the list is maybe kind of skewed to certain freedoms? Does South Dakota have really draconian laws that affect abortion?
Yeah, but they didn't. It says in the article they didn't factor in abortion rights or death penalty. And I think that that's basically because those are two things that a lot of people disagree on freedom, you know? Or okay, they're just okay. Such hot button issues where, you know, people can mostly wrap their head around high taxes or infringement on property rights or drugs or even guns. It's a very libertarian thing. And, you know, like the Libertarian Party, for instance, which is not the same as being libertarian, but, you know, the Libertarian Party codifies their beliefs pretty well of like, on their website, it says like the 5 things that all libertarians believe. And then it goes on to say that they don't take an opinion on abortion because it's pretty much split like 50-50 down the middle for libertarians. Because you can argue initiation of aggression on either the fetus or the mother.
Right. The death penalty is not a tough one for me. But I mean, I think abortion will always be one of those ones where it's just rough because, you know, yes, the mom is taking a life. But at the same time, the baby wouldn't have a life if it wasn't for the mom. And I don't want to get into the hairy of it, but I could see leaving abortion off of a list like this. I guess I can co-sign that. So how are you responding to this woman as we speak live on the air?
She said, they certainly should have factored in abortion laws. And I said, then write and publish your own list. And now I'm blocking her.
So you'll never see the list. I'm not a fan of blocking people.
I am. I love it.
Really? I don't know. I think of my Facebook as almost an advertisement to the world. You know, it's the Nima Vedati brand, and I don't want to turn away any viewers.
I just don't like being yelled at. I mean, I'm ashamed of you for posting that. That's ridiculous. I'm not going to block her.
Don't block.
Yeah. But
leave it there. It's open record. Let her be ashamed and let people who know you and know her and, realize that she's being the one, you know.
A bunch of my friends will jump in and argue with her, and I'll never post on this thread again because I was just putting it up there. I didn't really have much of an opinion of it except to agree that California is one of the least free states, and I mean, New York and California and you know. I just don't like how far Wyoming is down on the list, but I guess Wyoming has itself to blame.
Yeah, I don't know. Part of it is practicality, too. I mean, Wyoming might have some pretty bad laws, but the other thing about Wyoming is there's a lot less cops, I feel, in Wyoming than there is in other places. There are vast expanses of Wyoming where you'll never see a cop, you know, for hours and miles, which... Yep. To me, if you're effectively free, that's the important thing. If you can buy a plot of land, if you can have 40 acres where, you know, a cop is never going to see it and there's never going to be a helicopter flying over it, you're essentially free.
Yeah.
I hope. For now. Although, I suppose, you know, there's always EPA and water rights. And in a place like Wyoming, where half of the state is owned by the government, you know, it's all government-owned land, either BLM or state land. You know, they can always do things like claim they're protecting sage grouse or looking at water rights and making sure everything's flowing and making sure the environment is pretty and end up doing some kind of satellite survey or airplane survey on your land.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you can't have a giant building where you're just free in because then it's a terrorist complex and they come and bust the tank and blow you up.
So Gil Scott-Heron died.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He did. He did not survive in America.
Yeah.
But I guess on a long enough timeline, none of us do. So how do you feel about that, Michael?
That's a line from Fight Club.
Fight Club. Yeah, I was thinking about it the other day. That Pixies song popped into my head.
How do I feel about what? Him dying?
I mean, you on your Facebook posted meh when you posted
this. Yeah, well, I was sad. You know, I saw him live. I guess it's kind of weird when famous people you don't know die. Like, I actually cried when Kurt Cobain died, but it was probably less... I mean, I was touched by his music. I didn't get into his music until they were famous. I actually had a chance to see Nirvana at a club I was working at, and I was like, I'm going to just stay home and hang out with this chick. I don't want to go to that show.
Did they have a local buzz at the time? Like, you knew who they were?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were playing a club that held about 100 people, and I heard they packed about 200 in that night. It was totally sold out. But, you know, I didn't hear them really till Nevermind. And I loved him, but I think I was more bummed out when Kurt Cobain died because I was about a year away from hitting bottom with heroin myself. And it just, you know, he kind of looked like me.
I mean,
he was blonde and he kind of looked like we could be in the same lineup. And my mother wrote me and like, she was like, I saw this on TV that this guy died. He looks like you and he reminds me of you and you need to get your life together.
Yeah.
You know, so it was kind of like transference or something, but. I think that when famous people die, I don't usually get all weepy about it like a lot of people do because I don't kid myself into thinking that I have a direct connection with people through their art. I mean, I think in a way it's kind of sociopathic when people do, but in a way it's also just what good art does. You know, it touches your soul.
Yeah.
But people take it too far a lot of times. Like, I think it's weird when people write letters to celebrities and act like they know them and have relationships with them and especially stalk them. And
I think at that point they're getting confused. I feel like I have a connection with the art, not necessarily the artist.
Yeah. Yeah, but people do blur that. But no, I was sad enough when Gil Scott-Heron died to go, meh. I saw him play a show. I loved his music before that. I saw him play live. I was right up front. He looked me in the eye a couple times. I mean, I don't think that's like he's my lover or my brother or anything, but he looked me in the eyes, and the eyes are the window of the soul. So for a tiny second, I had a connection with him. So,
right.
And that's enough for me to go, meh. But it was interesting because we were just talking about him the week before, about how much we like him.
Yeah, yeah. And I never even really knew who he was until the week before. And then, he dies. Of course, I'd heard him, you know, for months because he's on the new Kanye album and I'd been listening to it. He has a poem called Who Will Survive in America, which is quality, although it has its sticking points. I mean, he's a great artist, but there is a little bit of a leftish leaning in there. He kind of rags on the word freedom. Free doom is what he calls it, as in the doom is free. But other than that, it's an interesting piece he has on the new Kanye album, you know, called Who Will Survive in America, and say, you know, when all is said and done, build a new route to China if they have you. So he kind of did have the concept of, you know, because of that America is in some kind of decline, and that this, at least the state, is in some kind of decline. And what's coming next? Who knows? That's the question.
Yep. Yep. So, speaking of Nirvana, did you see that thing I sent you about? There's a museum in Seattle that has a Nirvana exhibit right now, and there's a part of it called Music That Chris Novoselic Finds Inspiring, and there's a bunch of albums on the wall, and one of them is my band Bomb.
Bomb! Oh, that is totally Bomb. So Nirvana heads are going to be going to there and seeing your album on the wall.
Yep. It's the Experience Music Project Museum in Seattle.
Yes, yes. And if you haven't checked it out, please check Bomb out, because Bomb is indeed Bomb. It is.
Maybe I'll put a Bomb song at the end of this if we run out of, you know, if we don't run long.
Go for it, yeah.
I'm going to make a note for that.
Something really dark and heavy.
Or really fast and manic and bright, like the Maybe I'll Be Happy song.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I guess it depends on where it's at in the cast. If it's next to a Tyranny Today, it can be dark and brooding. If it's at the end, because we always end on a positive note, you know, bright and airy.
Even Bomb at Their Darkest had a lot of spunk and brightness in it, in the energy. So speaking of music, we were talking about light bulbs and digital cameras a few weeks ago, and like technology fading away versus technology being removed by fiat, by order of the king, like with light bulbs. And there's another technology I've seen and used and seen go away, and it's multi-track recording on tape.
Yeah, nobody does that anymore. You can do it.
Yeah.
Why use a tape when you can use a hard drive?
You ever done it?
On tape? No, I never have. I've multi-track recorded, you know, all day, every day, but of course it's on a computer, which the information's being written on a hard drive.
I've also done filmmaking on film. Not a lot of it, but...
Like tape, like reel-to-reel, like cutting tape?
Okay. Yeah, cutting 8mm film. When I was 15, I had an 8mm camera, and me and a couple friends made a little 3 or 4 minute art films. Not naked art films, but just art films with no sound, because there was no sound on that film. You know, you had to buy the film. It was like $10, and this is in like $1979. It was expensive. It's like $10 for 3 minutes of film, and then like $10 to get it developed, and then you have to take it to the drugstore and then send it away and get it back like 10 days later.
Perfect example of how the market makes things better and how it makes things more free and aids free speech much more than a government ever could. I mean, now anybody can do multi-track recording. Anybody can do video editing. All you have to do is find the right software and have a computer, and everybody has a computer.
Yeah, I haven't done a lot of filmmaking on film. You know, I've probably made 2 or 3 3-minute films, but I have done a lot of recording on 16 and 24 track tape in studios with bands. You know, I've done like 12 records and done a lot of recording in studios. And it was expensive, man. It was like, you know, anywhere between $50 and $200 an hour. I mean, I think the Warner Brothers record thing, it was a lot more than that, because we paid Bill Laswell $30,000 plus points on sales of the record, but he got $30,000 for a month's work to record the band to make that record.
Wow. Yeah, and people don't get paid that anymore. Well, I guess they do, but anybody can do it. You don't need to pay that to somebody in order to do a recording.
Right. Although, while my $3,000 home studio, digital studio now, is equivalent in power to the $200,000 or $500,000 worth of equipment rooms that I recorded in with bands, the thing that's different that not everybody has, even if they have that equipment, is the engineer and producer.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the gear doesn't make you talented.
Right. You got to have an ear. And of course, you know, you can pay for people's talent, pay for people's expertise and experience. And some people just know the tricks that make things sound infinitely better than somebody who's just picking up engineering or producing.
Does anyone even make multi-track tape anymore?
Ugh, that'd be a question I'd ask you. I have no idea. Like,
because I think that there's a few studios that still use it. I've read about them. There's this magazine that you should subscribe to. It's called Tape Op, T-A-P-E, next word O-P. Like, that's the name of a job position that doesn't exist anymore. It's tape operator.
Is it like a assistant gear catalog or what?
No, it's a magazine about recording. It's a print magazine that comes out 4 times a year, and it's free, and it's really good. And it's got interviews with people you like. And it's interesting because basically what it's gone from is, in the tape realm, everything added some noise, you know, and then digital adds no noise. But the interesting thing is it's gone to digital on the back end and old school analog on the front end. Like, what most recording studios do now is they have a computer with a digital mixing deck that actually controls the faders on whatever program they're using. But at the beginning of that chain, they have old tube microphones going into tube preamps.
Yeah.
Because tube preamps add a certain warmth that you cannot, you just cannot create with software yet.
Right, right. Yeah. I think to the human ear, maybe it's just because it's used to it, but to me, it almost, it makes things more natural. You know, they don't sound over-sanitized.
Yeah.
If things are completely digital, they can sound over-sanitized. I know a lot of hip-hop producers will, they'll crunch things down as far as the bits they have. You know, they will record with analog stuff, or they'll want to sample directly off of vinyl instead of an MP3 or CD, just because things that are recorded through analog sound, we call it dirty. You know, a hip-hop producer will call it, oh, that's real dirty sounding, but... The idea is, of course, more natural, something that, that came from a human being and not was created out of binary code.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was, tape was expensive, too, and it was like 24-track, 2-inch tape, you know, for like 15 minutes worth was like over $200. Tubes add, the warmth that they add is basically adding odd-numbered harmonics, and it's a warmth. There are, there is software to try to replicate it, but it doesn't pass the taste test, the listen test. You can tell the difference. Tape also added weird artifacts that didn't make it better or worse. It was just interesting. Like, if you listen to an old Led Zeppelin record on vinyl done from the tape, I think they've changed this in the digital remasters, but before a song starts, in the silence between the tracks, there's a little pre-echo of the beginning of the song, which is from the master tape printing from one layer to the next layer.
Yeah.
I like the music that you and I made. I mean, it sounded really good. Yeah,
Guns,
I mean, I think
Weed movie.
Yeah, I think that we worked well, not just as musicians, but as producers and engineers.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun. What we would do is I would carry my whole gear, you know, my home studio, in my life a lot because I move around so much. I try to have
fits
all my
in your car.
Fits in my car. Everything I can fold up. You know, I don't have a big PC. I have a laptop. I have the small digital beatbox called an MPC, but it's the little Game Boy version. You know, it's like 6 inches by 7 inches, something you can just carry in a briefcase. And I would just pack up all my gear. I have the little keyboard and go to Michael's place, and we'd like merge our studios together. So I'd plug all my equipment into all of his equipment. And
work for like 24 hours. And at the end of it, we'd be taking naps while the other guy works.
Yeah, yeah. And Michael would be working on one aspect of the music, and I'd be working on the other thing.
Yeah, like I'd have headphones, and I'd be making the beat for the next song, or the drums, guitar, and bass for the next song, and then you'd be working on the previous song, and then when we're done, you'd pull that into your computer and then add more beats and keyboards over it and then rap on it.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of fun. A lot of fun.
And I did some producing of, it was really organic, and it was really like 50-50, and you know, the music we wrote together, the lyrics we wrote together, you wrote a little more of them than I did, but then I also like... made you take multiple takes and gave you suggestions on how to phrase stuff differently. And we kind of produced each other. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's the old thing. Two minds are better than one. And sometimes I would get too into rapping like something only somebody who listens to rap every day would understand.
Yeah. You know, and I'd say, make it more commercial, make it more pop.
Which,
I'd say,
you know,
sing it like Nirvana. Sing it like Nirvana.
Right.
Because you like Nirvana too.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And the other thing is, you know, what the purpose of it was, as part of the movie, you know, which is going to be seen by people who aren't just hip hop heads. You know, it's not a hip hop movie. It's a freedom movie. It's going to be seen by people like you, Michael. And it's going to be seen by people who are 60 and believe in freedom and older.
Yeah. An interesting thing is we just got an offer. Someone wants to show it at a environmental social justice organization. And I looked at their website, and at first I was going to say no, but then I was like, of course we want to show it there. It's like, do we just want to show it to people we're preaching to the choir to? No. We want to show it to some people that aren't going to agree with everything in it. And it's like, it's a place that's really into weed, but it's in far northern California, so guns are a lot more common up there too. Well, I don't know if they're more common, but they're more openly common than they are in San Francisco or LA.
Right,
with,
right.
You know, white people.
Well, and, when we were coming up with the movie, I mean, that was the whole point. Originally, you know, that was part of the original idea, was to educate people who believe in one freedom but don't believe in the other, or don't believe that they think of them individually. They've been divided and conquered by the state. And so, you know, if Nancy Pelosi wanted to hold a viewing in the blue room in the Congress, whatever, I would say go for it too in that case.
Well, they've probably already held a viewing on someone's screen at DHS or DOJ, but, you know. I don't know if I'd call it a viewing. I'd call it dissecting, probably.
Yeah. Well, hopefully some of them got the point, or at least laughed at Johnny Patel.
Yeah.
since there they probably go. Work in call centers too when the NSA was watching it.
Yeah. You know, interesting thing about multi-track recording is even though the tape is gone, the technology still exists. Like, you know, you'll talk about print to tape, printing effects to tape rather than adding them later. Or
you mean the jargon still exists?
Yeah, the jargon still exists. And the interface of the software looks like a tape recorder and a mixer, you know, a manual mixer.
Well, I think jargon tends to stick like that. I mean, jargon will be based on old technology. For instance, in TV.
You still say film. Yeah, you say film.
Well, in TV, we say sound on tape, you know, when you get a sound bite. I'm not recording it on a tape.
And it's a hard drive.
Yeah.
So someone was joking that that showing at this film festival at the premiere, it's like it's in Philadelphia, like a few blocks from where the Constitution was signed. And someone was joking that, like, guns and weed, I'll bet cops are going to show up and check out the audience. And then people were joking about me getting arrested via Skype by Philadelphia police for talking about weed three blocks from where the Constitution was signed, which was, you know, and the Declaration was written on hemp. So I pissed off a bunch of Texans recently.
Oh, how'd you do that?
I did this radio interview. It was the second interview I'd done with the guy, but I've been having really strange sleep schedules lately. So I was about 27 hours without sleep when I did this interview. And it was for a terrestrial radio station, you know, like over-the-air radio station in Texas, near Houston or Galveston. I badmouthed Texas. You don't do that, man.
Did you badmouth Texas or did you badmouth the
government? I badmouthed the police in Texas. I said it's a police state.
You could do that. I believe that. Texas is, you know, has
Yeah, but these people were like, the host was kind of hip, but I think his producers are like right-wing Tea Party types.
I think that's one of the problems, and I'm glad you brought it up, and I hope you defended yourself on the interview, because we really need to separate the concept of the people in the government from the place geographically and the people who inhabit it. I mean, I love Texas. Texas is where I'd love to be, but I hate the cops in Texas. I hate the government in Texas. I hate accruing $2,000 of fines just for driving normally when I go to Texas, and I hate them asking me if I have bombs in my car when I get pulled over. Texas is a police state, plain and simple. And you know, a lot of places are, so I don't know if... But in Texas, I feel like... You know, the cops come to your door for traffic warrants. They came to my door asking for my wife. They came to my door asking for me when I lived in Texas for a speeding ticket.
They arrest people for drinking while brown.
You can defend Texas, defend its beauty, defend the people, but there's no way you can defend the police in Texas or the government of Texas if you believe in freedom.
I had a drinking while white dream. It's kind of funny. I'll tell you about it.
A dream? Yeah, were you getting hated on because you were white?
Yeah. You know who D.L. Hughley is?
Yeah. He's funny.
He was the bartender in this dream.
Nice.
I was doing three things I would never do. I was drinking, I was in San Francisco, and I was hitting on a chick that wasn't my wife. So three things I'd never do. And it was in a bar in San Francisco. It was in the building that I last lived in San Francisco. I was on the fifth floor, a six-story building. And on the first floor, there was a bar. And it was, I've heard that now it's become a real hipster joint, but then it was like a place where old men went to drink themselves to death.
All right.
But I was drinking in this bar and hitting on this chick, and the bartender was D.L. Hughley. And he was buying me drinks. He was getting me drunk for free and just yakking with me and having a good time and laughing. And then I was going to leave, and he says, "Well, you're driving. We have a breathalyzer here if you want to take a breathalyzer test." And I was like, I'm walking, but I'm kind of curious what my alcohol blood level is. I'll do it. And I blew like well over the legal limit. And all of a sudden he called the cops and he said, there's a new law in San Francisco where if you're intoxicated in a bar, you get arrested for drunk driving, even if you're not driving.
Ugh, I would believe it.
And then he was like saying like, yeah, that's what we do to white boys here. It was really funny. I've been watching this TV show he's on where he plays his character plays the race card all the time. It's kind of funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
In a related note, here in Washington State, we were talking last cast about the list where, you know, Washington is 40th worst state in the country for freedom. And speaking of drinking here, if you blow a breathalyzer and you blow a .06 or something below the legal limit, you can still get a DUI. It's up to the cop to determine.
Really?
If he feels you're intoxicated, he can still write you a DUI. Their view is any impairment is impairment. So. I can sort of see the justification, oh, well, you know, you could be .06 and still suck at driving, but you could be .0 and suck at driving. And also it's up to the cop in that case, because then there's no hard and fast. It's completely subjective. The cop can just, on his whim, if he doesn't like it, if you're brown, whatever the case may be, write you a DUI that's going to screw your life, get you fired from your job, and make you have to pay thousands of dollars.
I just think America's following the UK more and more and, like, just throwing...
I almost feel like the UK is like the test lab.
It is. Like, we're about 10 years behind them. You know, there's a new thing in the UK where they can now demand data decryption under penalty of jail time. Like, if you have encrypted information on your computer and they confiscate your computer and you refuse to give them the password, they could throw you in jail for
that. Wow. Ugh, that is so scary.
I think we're not far away from that. I have a workaround for that, though, that, you know, I'm not saying anyone should break the law, but that's not against the law here. But I'll just say, in theory, here's what you could do. There's a software program called TrueCrypt, and TrueCrypt has an ability to form a second volume that's decrypted that they can't see. And what you could do is you can have a first volume that they can see. They can see it's encrypted, but they can't get into it without the password. But
you'd give them the password to that, and it'd be a decoy decryption.
Yeah, and it would be, and you know, you wouldn't give it to the password right up front. You'd fight them on it a bit, but then finally give in when they threaten you. And what I would put in that would be things that are not illegal, but people would want to hide, like plump lady porn, granny porn. I'm a fan.
Yeah,
you know, maybe like a bad novel and bad poetry that you're. That anyone in their right mind would be ashamed of other people seeing, the diary of your failed diet, you know, things that people could conceivably want to hide.
Embarrassing stuff.
Yeah, embarrassing stuff, but not illegal stuff.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a good workaround.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully that doesn't come to America, but I mean, it's not like there's any attention paid by the government or by the bureaucrats or the people in the state to concerns like that at all. I mean, they laugh when they hear the term civil liberties. They chuckle as if that would change their mind about something.
Well, did you see the thing about the cops in Canton, Ohio, stripping the woman naked, and it's on video for nothing? And it was another thing of, like, she called the cops because she was a victim, and they ended up taking her away, and she was resisting being pushed around, and they ended up strip searching her.
Yeah, yeah. And like we've said a million times, don't ever call the cops. Yeah. Not for help.
Yeah, like the lady who called the cops about the wallet in Casper. You know, if I found a wallet, I would probably just let the government deal with it by dropping it in a mailbox, because a lot of people don't know this. One of the services that the post office provides is they will return a wallet if it's got ID in it and you drop it in a mailbox with no envelope or anything.
I might do that, but I wouldn't even want to get the government involved.
I'd mail it to the guy.
Yeah, I think part of our movement is, let's operate without the state. Let's just say, you know, we don't need the state to do certain things. Let's interact on a neighborly basis. Let's not call the park ranger if our neighbor in the tent over is upsetting us. Let's go talk to them.
Or just move to a different location.
Yeah, yeah. Or just wait it out. I'm always a fan of, if I have a problem with somebody or something, I'll talk to them. I won't be belligerent. You know, I'll just express and voice my concern. I don't need to call the authorities. I'm not going to be a tattletale. I think people need to learn that from an early age.
Stop snitching.
Stop snitching.
Which is like, I mean, I sort of have some problems with that, because it includes, like, don't help them find a murderer, which I might help them find a murderer, you know, especially if it was someone I loved murdered. But it's kind of an interesting phenomenon, the don't, you know, stop snitching thing. It's certainly like, don't talk to the cops about things that aren't violent crimes.
Well, yeah, to me, it's an outgrowth of the drug war. I mean, it's stop snitching because people are trying to get money in the black market, which is really the free market. And when you're snitching, you're siding with the oppressors, the people that are going to throw the person in jail because he's just doing nothing more than free commerce and making his money and getting his stack.
You know what I'm really surprised about is that SWAT attack in Tucson of the former Marine where they killed him over nothing. Now, I want to make some corrections too. I think we said that there was no warrant, but there was a warrant and they did not find drugs. The thing I'm amazed is that people aren't screaming from the rooftops about that. You know, a few wing nuts like us on Facebook yacked about it and talked about it on the podcast, and I don't know how to say wing nuts, but you know, some people talk about it and the Oath Keepers did something about it, but it's like, that should be, like, on everyone's lips. You know, when I was a kid, I remember, do you know about the Kent State shootings?
I know about them, and people were upset about it. I mean, weren't there protests over it?
Yeah, it was a war protest at Kent State University in Ohio, and the National Guard shot and killed four unarmed students. I mean, Neil Young wrote a song about it. I mean, it was national news, and it's still national news. You know, if you talk to somebody my age or older and say Kent State, they're going to be, like, instantly angry, you know?
Yeah.
It was 1970. I was 6 years old, and I remember hearing about it on TV. Why isn't this that? I mean, I have a few theories. One is that he was armed, but it was in self-defense in his home. Another is that I think if he were black instead of Hispanic, it would get more play. In a way, because I think that Hispanics don't want to make waves. First of all, you know, some of them aren't here legally, so they don't want to make waves about that. And then I think a lot of them are just, it's kind of new. They haven't been oppressed as long as blacks. Like, blacks will get angry about stuff, and rightfully so.
I think part of the piece here, too, that we have to look at is it's in a part of Arizona that's notoriously liberal. Like, there's actually been a secession movement in the county because they don't want to be part of the greater Arizona, some of the Democrats there.
A liberal secession movement.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. Just from, like in the Civil War.
Well, they don't want to secede from the Union. They just want to be their own state. So they still love the feds. They just don't love the state.
They don't
government.
Love the Republicans that run Arizona.
Exactly. And I think it's important to note that
Arizona should let them because they wouldn't have any. They wouldn't be taking tax money from the rest of the state then. they changed their mind. A liberal secession is such a weird idea because it's like,
who are they going to take money from?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas, the thing you have to remember when people compare the Tea Party to the Civil War and crap like that, it's like the Democrats were the South and the KKK, later, and the slaveholders.
Part of the point I'm making here, though, is that the sheriff there in that county, he portrays himself as sort of the anti-sheriff Arapaio, which is the big right-wing guy, the main drug warrior that has the tent cities and treats all the criminals like they're dirt, even if they've just sold a little bit of pot or some meth. He's supposed to be the anti that guy. But instead, he's been totally defending this, which is an obvious violation of civil rights. A SWAT team just bursts into a guy's door and shoots him full of 70 rounds. And yeah, there is no outcry from the left. There is no outcry from a lot of civil libertarians.
There's not much outcry from military personnel either,
which is really sad because he's a veteran. I mean, normally
I know.
Veterans get upset when they have to pay for checking their baggage on Delta Airlines. They get upset over little bitty things, but...
And they rally behind it too.
Yeah.
But I think part of it is because people in the military are so beholden to the government, they can't easily make waves about something like this.
Which I think is another big thing that you need to expose to people who maybe equate the two as being separate. There are people that are so anti-big government on the right. We hate the government, bureaucrats shouldn't decide, yada, yada. And yet they worship the military as if it weren't run by bureaucrats, as if it weren't part of the big government, as if it's some kind of separate thing. But it's not. That's who runs it. It's run by a bunch of bureaucrats wearing ties in the Pentagon and giving themselves medals every day for their action items on their memos.
Yep. So I have a freedom fix.
Freedom fix.
Freedom fix. Freedom fix.
Bank of America building gets padlocked after homeowner forecloses on the bank. Did you see that one?
I did see that. I'm surprised if it got padlocked, was it by the county sheriff or some type of law enforcement agency actually sided with a homeowner over a bank is what you're trying to tell me here.
Yeah, it was a judge in Collier County, I believe it's Ohio, ruled in favor. Basically, it was a mistake. Like, the bank foreclosed on a home that was paid free and clear.
Ah, okay.
And didn't remedy it when the guy kept calling and had his lawyer call and issued papers. So this judge sided with the guy and sent the sheriff out and brought moving trucks, and they started taking the computers and the chairs and the office furniture out of the bank. And all of a sudden, the bank got someone down there to take care of this problem.
Wow. So it ended up not being foreclosed on. The bank got all their property back. And did they give the guy his house back at least? Was it a clean break, a truce?
Yeah.
Okay. See, that's a freedom fix. But I also think it's interesting. I think if it were the county government or the tax assessor who had seized somebody's house for non-payment of property taxes or something like that, I don't think it would have resolved itself that quickly.
Yeah.
I think it would have been like the House of Sand and Fog, and it would have taken years.
Yeah.
And
it would have taken years. And then he would have had to pay his own legal fees probably.
Yeah. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's a good freedom fix, I suppose, that at least they were able to break cleanly. The owner got his property back and word.
Word.
And now,
The Nima News with Nima Vidati.
And now for your daily dose of nanny statism in our daily segment, Tyranny Today.
Tyranny Today.
Did you hear about the guy that got fined for paying a fee in pennies?
No, I didn't. That's definitely not a freedom fix.
Yeah, that's a Tyranny Today. It was paying a medical bill, too. In Vernal, Utah, he was paying a $25 disputed medical bill in pennies, and he was charged with disorderly conduct.
Okay, well, maybe he was, like, paying them one at a time and being a dick about it or something.
No, he brought them all in, a pile of pennies. Aren't pennies money?
Supposedly. I mean, that would be legal tender, right? Pennies are legal tender.
Yeah, they're actually worth more than a penny for the copper in them, too.
No, the old ones are, but the new ones are just zinc.
New ones are zinc, right.
The nickel currently, the nickels that are still in existence are worth more than 5 cents. So if you want to save most nickels, I think you'll be okay.
Yeah, isn't there somebody who's trying to make millions by investing in nickels like that? I don't think you can legally melt them down, though, either.
Yeah,
get
but
you, for you don't destroying government need to. Properly.
You can just trade them for the metal content in them. I mean, you don't need to melt gold down from a coin or a necklace to
be true.
Able to sell it for what it's worth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there was a guy in Maryland a year ago who showed up at the county clerk's office to pay a tax bill of $966.86 in metal coins. And a New Jersey school district a few years back punished 29 students who paid for their $2 school lunches in pennies as a prank with two-day detentions.
Okay, so avoid pennies. Pennies are like the bastard of the coin world, I guess. None of the vending machines take them, not even the little candy machines anymore.
I used to have a friend, I still have this friend, Greg Dale, who would throw pennies on the ground. He'd get pennies and change, and he'd just take them and throw them on the ground.
So people would pick them up and think they had a lucky day?
He just didn't think they were worth putting in his pocket. So we have a couple reviews on iTunes I'll read. This one is from someone named Herspris, and it says, creative, and it's 5 stars, and it says, two guys saying what they think is important. It's fun until such time comes where it cannot even be said anymore. So are they predicting the SWAT team's going to get us for our podcast?
Ugh, I don't know. I think we just keep saying it.
Yeah, I mean, it's someone who's on our side, obviously, but it's kind of a weird foreboding in the future.
As long as they gave us 5 stars, right?
Yep, and then here's another one. Michael and Nima rock. 5 stars. If you want a new and interesting look into the ideology behind freedom and liberty, you've got to check these guys out. Not only do they engage relevant topics with a thorough understanding and knowledge of American history and prevailing philosophies of the libertarian lifestyle, but they are funny and candid. No matter where you lie on the spectrum of wanting a freer society, there is definitely something for you to gain from listening to these Michael Dean and Nima Vidati episodes. And you might be lucky enough to hear some good music on there, too.
Hell yeah. I can co-sign that. I love that.
So, yeah, what did you talk – you mentioned something about – was it the whitest kids in the room or was it what comedy troupe?
The whitest kids you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking of Boys in the Hall. I get them mixed up. The Kids in the Hall.
Kids in the Hall. Yeah. Yeah, you're all mixed around there. I recently saw a clip of The Whitest Kids You Know that was pretty funny, too, about the – it was sort of a clarification of the Abraham Lincoln assassination. And basically, they're watching the play, and Lincoln's being really loud and obnoxious. And then John Wilkes Booth is like, could you please be quiet? I'm trying to watch the show. And he's like, what? What now? What, you fat MF? What you gonna do? You gonna come at me? I'm trying to watch the show. Could you please pause the play? No, hold up, hold up. Rewind the play like 5 minutes because I didn't hear it because this fat bastard is talking.
It's basically the 1800s version of turn off your cell phone.
Yeah. And so then what happens is John Wilkes Booth gets so upset that Abraham Lincoln keeps yelling at him that he goes and hammers him in the ass with a hammer until he dies. And the epilogue of the bit is, so historians felt that the young country was too fragile yet to know the truth about Abraham being killed to death by hammering in the ass. Killed to death. So they made up this story about him getting shot.
You know, I used to live in William Seward's house. You know who Seward was?
Wasn't he? He was some official in the Abraham Lincoln's cabinet administration, right?
Yeah, Secretary of State under Lincoln. He was also targeted for assassination, but they didn't get to him.
You lived in his house?
Yeah. He's the guy that bought Alaska from Russia for like a few cents an acre. They called it Seward's Folly. Seward's
right.
Icebox. Yeah, he was the Secretary of State. And he built this beautiful house in Western New York. It's 22-room mansion. And it was actually moved in 3 pieces, like 9 miles up the hill when they were building the Welch's grape juice plant. they were going to tear it down, but instead some historical society bought it and hauled it up the hill in three pieces and put it back together. And my dad was the realtor that sold it. And it took like 9 months to sell. And it was right after my parents' divorce, and my dad was living in it. Basically, he needed a place to live, but it was also right. Like they let him do it because he was paying to keep the heat on, which kept the pipes from freezing.
Right, right.
So I got to live in that house for 9 months. It was pretty nice. That's where I shot the bunny when I was a kid. I used to take my dad's, like, I could shoot a .22 in my yard. It was that out in the sticks.
Did you eat the bunny?
Yep.
Good.
It wasn't very good. Bunny is not, bunny's kind of like eating a tire.
Really? Really tough?
Yeah. Or it can be.
I've had turtle soup. Found it delicious. And alligator, too. Fried alligator was also delicious, but.
So do you know why there's so many Canadian comics?
Why?
Do you know about Second City?
No.
I watched this great documentary on Netflix the other day about the history of Second City. Second City, it was one of the first improvisational, kind of modern, hip theater troupes. It was in Chicago, and it was called Second City because it was kind of like taking up on this this dig that someone had made on Chicago. It was a New York Times theater writer had said, Chicago will always be a second city to New York. And so they called their troupe Second City. It turned into Saturday Night Live. It was like John Belushi, Gilda Radner, Chevy Chase. The one in Chicago got closed down, so they moved it to Toronto. And the whole troupe got picked up by the beginning of Saturday Night Live. And they didn't want to keep losing comedians to Saturday Night Live. So they started their own TV show. It was Second City. And it was on when I was a kid. I remember it on TV. Steve Carell, Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Mike Myers, Tim Meadows, Bonnie Hunt, Stephen Colbert, Halle Berry, Amy Sedaris, Jack Breyer, Dave Foley, Kevin McDonald.
They're all Second City alumni?
Yeah, they're all Second City alumni.
Huh, I did not know that.
It's really cool, and it was kind of one of the first, like, hip improvisational theaters. John Candy started there.
Okay, I dig it. And it was in Toronto.
Yeah.
It was moved to Toronto from Chicago.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Mike Myers is Canadian.
Yeah.
Jim Belushi, too. John Belushi, Alan Alda, Alan Arkin, Ed Asner.
A crap load of people, basically.
Yeah. So that was a really good documentary. I saw another movie I really like. It's called Bulletproof Salesman.
Okay.
It's this great documentary about this really likable German armored car dealer. It's a guy who takes Mercedeses in Germany and plates them so they're indestructible and sells them for about $250,000 over the price of the Mercedes in war zones.
Nice. You know,
mostly in the Middle East. And
yeah.
And it was really interesting because the reviews on it on Netflix were kind of bashing him. Like some of them were saying, like, you know, he's a bad man because he's profiteering off the war and contributing to the war. And I'm like, contributing?
He's doing protecting. The opposite.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
He's keeping people from having bullets enter them. Bullets that are fired by violent forces. That's
and,
the opposite.
And other people were complaining because when he's in these war zones, he has an automatic weapon on his lap when he's driving around. And I'm like, well, it's a war zone. It's a war zone, man.
Don't go to a war zone without an automatic weapon any more than you go to a gunfight without a gun.
Yeah. And the guy really seemed to care a lot about his product. He was one of the pioneers doing it, and a lot of people came in and started making inferior armor-plated cars and selling them for a lot less. But he continually does testing of, like, basically putting bombs under his cars and shooting at them with automatic weapons to test vulnerabilities and improve them.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
It's a good movie. He's really charming and kind of poetic and introspective, and but kind of a tough-looking guy. It's a really good movie. Yeah. It's on Netflix. It's called Bulletproof Salesman.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind checking that out. That'd be a lot of fun. Speaking of guns, I've been Mexican carrying a lot lately because it's starting to get hotter, you know, and I have my
explain
my CPL.
Mexican carrying, why it's called that.
I didn't want to explain why it's called that.
I know why it's called that.
It's basically when you carry the gun in your waistband, but in the front, you know, not on the side with the holster. You just slip the gun in there in the front of your pants. I'm doing it in the movie a little bit.
You do
bit
it in the movie a lot, yeah.
It.
It's not Mexican, like, gangbanger in L.A. Mexican. It's like vaquero cowboy 100 years ago in Mexico.
Right. And I've actually found it comfortable. This morning when I went to the gas station, I Mexican carried, but I shifted it to the side a little bit, you know, to where it's almost on my hip, but like three quarters, like cheating out, like halfway.
Open carry or under a shirt?
Under a shirt, concealed carry. which I find is really easier in the summertime. You know, I don't necessarily want to open carry all the time here, but I don't want to wear a jacket.
I call it Plaxican carry after Plaxico Domingo.
Shot himself in the leg.
Yeah, because he was
Plexico Burris, not.
Yeah, Domingo. Sorry, because he was Mexican carrying in sweatpants though, which you don't want to do. You gotta have a belt.
It's easiest in jeans. You know, I was thinking, you know, about getting a smaller pocket gun, like maybe a Kel-Tec. I think it's P11 or PT11. But I've heard the recoil and the trigger are kind of rough on that. I haven't shot one yet, and maybe if I go shoot one and get used to it, I'd like it. But I like having my full size gun.
If you want to get a second gun for easy carry, I'd get a Snub Nose 357. The kick is stunning, but it's like...
I don't want to have a stunning kick because I want to be able to easily place second, third, and fourth shots. And also, I want to have more rounds. I don't want to be limited to six rounds.
Five shots.
With the Kel-Tec, you can have
five.
You can have 12 rounds in the mag, you know, and one in the chamber with the extra, the mag. Or with the one that comes with it, you know, you got at least 10. I guess I'd rather have that. But I think there's something to be said about having a full-size gun. So I was wondering, you know, what do you think, Michael? Would you rather have a bigger gun and have it harder to conceal? Or do you like – I know you like your snub-nose revolvers because you can put them in your pocket,
too. Well, I really like my – I'm really liking my Glock 22.
And that's a full-size
gun? No, it's a kind of compact full-size gun.
It's the compact Glock, 40 Smith & Wesson round, right?
40 caliber. Because the Glock model – I'm sorry, the Glock 23 is the smaller one. That's what I have. I had the Glock 22, the bigger one. That was too big to conceal. This one is small enough to not easily conceal. You cannot fit it in a pocket. You need a holster. But it holds how many rounds, DJ? 16? 13 plus one in the chamber.
How do you conceal it on a hot summer day if you can't put it in your pocket and you need a holster?
Well, what I've been doing so far, and it hasn't gotten terribly hot yet, but I've been wearing it in a shoulder holster under my left shoulder pointing backwards, and then wear a really light short-sleeved dress shirt over it and have it open and have a t-shirt underneath it.
Ah, okay. It doesn't get uncomfortable under your arm or anything like that?
No.
No? Huh, okay. No. Nope. Okay. I could see doing that. I think you actually recommended a shoulder holster to me at one time, and I was like, meh.
Yeah. Good for wearing a suit jacket, though, and you wear a suit jacket a lot.
Yeah, but I mostly wear it at work. I mean, I'm not going to wear a suit jacket when I'm going to the grocery store or when I'm doing anything else or on my days off, you know?
So speaking of D.L. Hughley, you ever seen the show Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip?
No, not at all.
The best TV ever made. Remember I used to like say how great The Shield was?
Yeah.
But you couldn't get behind The Shield because all the characters are stepping on people's constitutional rights all the time.
On their natural rights as well.
Yeah. And
mostly.
I can't really watch it anymore for that anyway. But the writing and acting and set design and producing and directing and camera work is all stunning in it. But Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, amazing show. It only did one season, one really long season, like 23 episodes or something, in the late 2006, 2007, I think it was. And it's interesting because it's on NBC and it's basically behind the scenes at something like Saturday Night Live. Now, does that sound familiar?
It sounds like 30 Rock.
Right. Yeah. And it was on at the same time as 30 Rock. And basically, they took the chance of putting these two shows on and figured that they'd extend one, whichever one did better. And they actually both did as well, but Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip was a lot more expensive to produce, so they kept 30 Rock.
And are you telling me that, in your opinion, you find it more humorous than 30 Rock? Because, I mean, 30 Rock is, like,
no, it's
hilarious.
It's as humorous as 30 Rock, but it has a lot more depth and beauty and, like, real kind of movie-style plot and turns. And it's, first of all, it's the only show I've ever seen where I don't want to fast-forward through the love scenes or, like, the romantic talk, because it's really deep and it's really well done.
So is it a drama or a comedy then?
It's a dramedy.
So it's an hour long or half hour?
It's an hour.
Okay.
40,
okay.
You know, TV hour, 40 some minutes.
TV hour, yeah.
And it stars, of all people, Matthew Perry, who I hate because I hate everyone on Friends because Friends was stupid. And I've never seen him in anything good, but he's great in this. And D.L. Hughley is one of the stars in it, and he's great. And it even has a Wyoming joke in it. You know, anytime I hear Wyoming, I'm kind of happy. It's one of the jokes they tell on the show within the show. And it's, new legislation in Wyoming would allow hunters to hunt with automatic weapons and silencers. Contacted for comment, Bear said, Rawr! But that's actually based on two bills. They're not really explaining it correctly, but our buddy Cale Case proposed two bills that did not pass a few years ago, and one was to be able to have a silencer, and another was for hunters to be able to carry a second weapon for self-defense against bears and have it be full auto.
Nice.
Yeah. But it's a stunning show, and I recommend that you check it out. It's better than 30 Rock. It's better than Parks and Recreation. It's as funny as both, but it's not slapstick like those two shows, like especially 30 Rock. I mean, there's a lot of just ridiculousness in it.
Yeah.
There's not that kind of ridiculousness, but there is humor, but it's a lot deeper and better and more human, and it's more like a movie every week. And there's like, I mean, DJ hates situational comedies, and I watched this whole thing in like 2 days, just one episode after the other. And then a week later, DJ spent the whole weekend watching them with me and was like wishing there was more when they were gone. And she hates situational comedy, but she loved Studio 60 on Sunset Strip.
I'll have to check it out. Although I do love slapstick. You know, I love a show that I can watch and just be completely ridiculous and hilarious at the same time. That's one of the reasons I love 30 Rock, is I love Tracy Jordan. He's just the funniest thing in the world.
Well, D.L. Hughley is kind of a similar character in this. He's the black guy on the show, and he's got personal problems and anger issues and parties a lot, but he's not a caricature like the Tracy Jordan character.
Okay. He's not the black buffoon archetype, like old Dirty Bastard. And
no. And he's playing himself. I think his character's name D.L. Hughley.
Oh, okay. Huh. Interesting.
And he's good.
I think I'll probably have to check that out, Michael. I mean, I usually trust you. I really loved watching Breaking Bad, and you kind of tipped me onto that. And
this is like Breaking Bad. It's like the quality of drama with the depth of, like, you care about the characters and what happens to them. And the high quality writing of Breaking Bad with a lot more humor.
Okay. Yeah, I can totally dig that. I'll have to check it out.
Guns don't kill people. The government does.
Sure does. And a lot of people.
That's a Dale Gribble quote, but it's good.
It's good, and it's true, and it's important to remember.
Yep.
Especially when people talk about guns.
So you got anything else before we wrap up? We could wrap up a few minutes short if you want.
I think we should wrap it up, B.
Okay. People should go, if they want, should go rate and review us on iTunes. Just go on the iTunes store in your iTunes program and search Freedom Fiends. We like hearing questions from users, and we like users from listeners, from abusers. And we have t-shirts for sale, and that's enough pimping.
I think feedback is important, too, even if you don't want to post a review on iTunes. You know, message us on Facebook or however you want to get a hold of us.
Tell us we're destroying America.
Tell us whatever you want, and we love to hear it. We want to make the podcast better. It's obviously a young podcast, and seems positive right now, but anything we can do to make it better, we're willing to do. So let us know.
Worms.
Happy all the time. Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I own me and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.